Greetings, everyone out there in webinar land. This is number 6 webinar out of 11. You can see that today Net Profit Analytics plays part 3. So this is the third of a four set of quartet of specific how-to plays if you had Net Profit Analytics. Let's get on with the show here. What I've done is just I've highlighted the particular plays that we're doing here in webinar 6, reducing repetitive interbranch stock keeping activity and solving the branch counter sales on profitability problem. If you want copies of this particular slideshow, you can email me, bruce@merrifield.com, and say, send me number 6. If you want them all, you can have those too. If you're interested in doing a customized session tuned to your channel, your company, whether it be a buying group or trade association or a specific distribution company. Some initial comments on master stocking of branches. It's okay, you know, if you go to the accounting department and say, okay, when you stock stuff usually at the main mothership hub, and you ship out to branches, what's the transfer fee that you use? Well, it's easy enough to say, we just charge 5% of whatever the cost of goods sold is, for example. And the accounting, you know, firm will say, that's fine, and, you know, you can keep doing that. However, in the Waypoint Analytics universe, we're actually looking at the size of the pick and the cost per serve of the pick, et cetera, and real costs of doing these things. So, you know, you're going to get quite a range. You know, 5% of a $2 item is obviously not enough money to cover the cost of shipping the SKU, whereas 5% of a, you know, two skids of stuff would be quite a big hit. What you'll find out in the Waypoint reporting is the branch profits, see a typo there, don't actually equal the accounting system profits for the branch's operating profits. So just deal. It's just a, you know, something you can figure out. So I'd say for the auditors to keep it simple, and then for the here we go. Keep it simple there, and then, you know, reconcile. You can do a workaround for the two branch profits. What actually happens is you'll find that if you do a rank report, so this is actually a play. And the main location is shipping to two satellite branches, warehouse 102 and 103. So if we take one of the branches, and we go, and you can see that there's no revenue, there's no GP, but when you look at the main locations, you know, basically hit to their what we call net before compensation, which in this case would be operating profit because there is no compensation involved in these interbranch transfers. The main hub is losing $47,000 to 103, so that makes the main hub look that much less profitable. And then ditto a loss here for 102. So what we're going to do is we're going to go to warehouse 103. We're going to rank all of the SKUs that were shipped from the main hub to 103. They're ranked by profitability. So we're going to go to the bottom of the report. And the only way you can be at the bottom of the report is to have an item that got picked a lot of times and there was no gross margin dollar in the transaction. So it's pure activity cost. In these cases, there is no margin, it's just transferring. So here you had an item that got picked 68 times. I mean, you know, that's more than once a week. So you'd say, well, why wouldn't we just, you know, look at this and say, why, and ship them a case instead of one type of thing. So by shipping, you know, cases of stuff here, and you know, people say, oh, but you know, looking through one narrow lens, that might increase the amount of inventory that we have in the system, because you still have the main hub warehouse, and now I'm stuck with a, you know, a year's supply, and only have one pick instead of 68. But you're trading off. It's this key concept, which is positive trade-offs. Sometimes you have to say, I'm going to have a negative. I'm going to have a little bit more inventory. And that, you know, cost of holding it might cost me, you know, $10 to save $500 in activity costs. And then you also always have it. usually when you have 68 picks, the chances of not having it when the 103's customer needs it, because obviously they're buying it over and over and over again for some customer, then you can't do a fill rate. And you might say, oh, by the way, just pick it at the main warehouse and ship it at a, you know, extra freight expense and a day late and more paperwork to complete an order. So you can see it's just sort of crazy activity at the extremes. So that's just a simple play that you can do to streamline a lot of unnecessary friction and improve overall fill rates. Now, before we get into rethinking counter business, it's a loser. This is such a sacred cow. I cannot tell you how many distributors just look at me and they just want to kill me. They burn them at the stake. This is not what we believe. I don't want to look at the math. I just want to know that little guys growing to big guys, acorns and oak trees. You know, I don't want my competition to get one extra customer, even if it's a loser. You know, you can't tell me with this high margin and rebates, what about the rebates? Well, there's no math here. They're just searching for reasons to say, no, I don't want to change. You know, I love this business. It gives me a sense of action, stuff's happening, there's money in the till. You know, we can take care of this business anyway. If we lost, you know, we're all here. So might as well take care of these guys, you know, as opposed to sit here not realizing there's an opportunity cost of if you weren't taking care of that losing transaction, you could presumably be proactively working on something that's going to give you better results. People just don't want to believe there's opportunity costs or dynamic redeployment possibilities of their people. So what I want to do is before we get into the actual, you know, solutions is to is to go through these sort of supporting concepts. First of all, for an overview, branch activity is very typical in contractor supply channels, and there are different customer subcategories in that world. You know, there often is a big contractor who grew up right around the corner from the warehouse, and so long ago they said, "Hey, as we're growing, why should we have inventory? Why don't we just use work off of the distributor's inventory?" And, you know, besides, you know, if you zero inventory, you have to tie money up in it. And if you have inventory, it kind of disappears, shrinkage. People might steal this and go moonlight. So they're stealing labor and stuff from me. So it's a one lens assumption, which is inventory's bad, as opposed to looking in a more robust way. So, you know, every morning there are 10 guys and their vans that come over and they stand in line and waste an hour to wait and to get their stuff they need. And then they get to a job, they forgot something, they come back. And, you know, by the end of the day, you're cranking out over 20 invoices per day and maybe throw in some returns and so forth. So it's an enormous activity span. And of course, when you're waiting in line for an hour, you could be out billing an hour of labor. So there could be an opportunity cost there. The second category would be an account that's very large potentially, but they're actually married to somebody else. And what they do is that when they're driving by your location and they need something, well, I'm going to pull in here real quickly. And because they're really big, they say to the sales guy or the company, hey, because I'm really big, I won't even consider buying from you unless I get the same contract prices that I get from my number one vendor. So boom, they have no minimums, they get free returns, et cetera. And really all they're doing is coming by and cherry picking either your convenient location, if it's a counter, but even if it wasn't a counter, there are people that will call and order nothing but small orders on dust collecting items because you happen to have that oddball item that their number one, two, three vendor didn't have. So there's cherry pickers, and you have to really sort of assess what are the odds that this relationship that they have with their number one vendor is going to break up anytime soon. And so are we going to be prepared to lose money for the next 15 years until maybe something changes? And then, of course, you just have a sea of minnows where they're coming in and buying small stuff, and maybe they actually, you know, take stuff for a job and they want to return it, and you get free returns. So it's a paper mill cost activity. Now, distributors without, you know, with negligible will call, still are going to accumulate over time minnows. There's sort of a process for how this happens. And minnows, basically, there's an exchange going on. they are giving us a retail sized order. They're saying, hi, I would like to give you $20 in margin dollars to pay for your activity costs and so forth. And then you give me wholesale services and prices. Thank you very much for the $50, $60, $80, $100 worth of wholesale activity costs and the wholesale price. You know, you can't be, you know, getting a retail sized order delivering your doorstep for free. And people might say, oh, but we need the minnows because, you know, acorns grow in a mighty oak trees. But that's, you know, in a forest, for example, in a mature forest, the, you know, statistically one in maybe 100,000 acorns actually makes it to an oak tree. It's a lottery winner. It lands, and before squirrels eat it or whatever, a bear poops on it, so boom, it's got fertilizer. And a huge oak tree gets knocked down by a huge storm, opening up a patch of sunlight, and dead roots that now don't compete for underground nutrients and so forth, and so they grow up. Basically, when you look at your minnow, your sea of minnows, and say, how many are basically self-employed? They've created a job for themselves. They have not changed at all. The past of, you know, the track record of innovating and changing and ambition for the last 5 years is a good indicator of what they're going to do for the next 5 years. And they've done nothing for the last 5 years. It's gotten older, you know, and they're, you know, whining louder and chiseling more or whatever. And maybe they're morbid. They're actually even dying. So, you know, maybe 3% are actually entrepreneurs with ambition. And so fine, maybe those ones you might want to, you know, take a little bit of we'll lose money now to, you know, get, you know, a positive return later on. But remember that distributors don't have Amazon's lowest fulfillment and delivery cost, you know, structure, nor, I mean, you know, at Amazon now, click to ship, it's 15 minutes. There's $1 of human labor in that order. If the robot picks it, in the narrow sense, it's 20 cents a pick. If the human picks it, it's 40 cents. And then, you know, they've innovated like crazy on last mile, and maybe they still lose money, and they don't care because basically they've got your eyeballs, they've got the click stream, they're monetizing that by upselling, cross-selling, et cetera, with, you know, AI bots, and they're selling advertising to those eyeballs. So, you don't, you know, typical distributor doesn't have that. Now, if you want to run a little convenience store, people come in, you have to go look at Fastenal or W.W. Grainger store or Home and Depot and model and benchmark yourself against those. I mean, Fastenal overall averages 57% margin, but at the store on a C-store level basis, I mean, some of their margins could be 70%. And then the customer comes in and picks it themselves and pays cash or credit card. At Home Depot, you scan your own stuff, you know, and with a credit card swipe, you know, humans aren't involved at all. So, you know, you have to have a model like that as opposed to saying, oh, let's charge list price, you know, from some factory, you know, 50 years ago, and realize you're locked into a 35% margin, which is not enough on a small dollar pick. So it's death by a thousand nicks. And the busyness is basically eating up all your proactive intentions and profits. Hey, everybody, have you done this number one important thing? No, boss, we're too busy taking care of returns from yesterday's sales to minnows that we're losing money on. The minnow accumulation process, let's say, this is a true story. Guy sells Jansan stuff, so he's got towels and tissues and cleaning supplies, which he can sell to everybody. Plus, they've got disposable food service items, lots of mom-and-pop, little greasy spoon kind of places growing nowhere. And because the bulky products, cases of towels and tissue, and so forth, require their own trucks, you know, it's easy to sort of say, well, as long as our truck's out there rolling around, we can make one more stop on the route. We're just connecting dots, and it's really pretty. It's almost like for free, so let's just do it and give free delivery within the city or whatever it is. So you hire a rookie and you say, I don't really have any accounts to give you because all the old guys have been here forever and they've inherited and they're sitting all the big accounts. So, you know, here is the, you know, the phone book and, you know, whatever, and go, you know, go find a lot of new accounts, which statistically are just little growing nowhere minnows. So they open up a lot of new accounts. They say, well, this is going nowhere. So they quit, but the minnows stay and you just kind of keep accumulating them over time. So one day you wake up, in this particular case study, the guy woke up and had found out that the bottom 50% of his customers generate only 4% of his gross margin dollars, but 20% of, actually more, about 24% of his transactions, his invoices, and the way the cost serve model, it was about 20% of the total expense of running the company. Now, this is an abstraction. 50% gives you 4%. But if you said, well, let's go rank these from the biggest, you know, from the least loser to the biggest loser. The bottom 20% of these guys are less than 1% of the GP and like 10% of the expenses. And so you can actually go look at, put faces on these people and say, how is this possible? How do we have, 100 orders, with $10 in margin and a kind of thing? What's going on? So if you can do your rankings, you can say, well, what's going on? How do we stop it? How do we unwind the process? And when are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? How are we going to do it? Are good questions. So another sort of concept tool is, well, wait a minute. If we lose one account, everybody's here. I'm not going to fire 0.1% of, my people tomorrow because we have a little bit less activity. So basically our costs stay the same, and boom, right away that $1 of lost margin comes out of the bottom line. So no, I'm not going to do it. As opposed to, well, no, wait a minute, in your backyard, if you weed, weeds, then the roots of the good stuff can have more, nutrients. They don't have to compete underground for nutrients. Wouldn't the good stuff grow more? Or if you had a bush and you prune the ugly, stubby, grubby parts of it, the fixed root energy, that would be all your employees, just flow to what's left and it sort of grows and blossoms more fully. Yeah, well, it doesn't work in my business. So, one way of looking at that is to, on this next slide, this is a particular report in the Waypoint universe where you can take the what we call the NBC, the net before compensation, basically operating profit, but it hasn't had incentive compensation at the customer level subtracted from it. So what we do is we take the NBC from an account 2 years ago, and we compare it to the NBC last year, and we figure out the difference, and then we rank by positive difference. So here's an account at the top where they were a huge loser, but because this guy had Waypoint, he went to work on it, he was able to consolidate an enormous amount of activity costs. So in theory, there was a gain of 241,000, of NBC to the good. Now here's a guy that's a little bit more straightforward. They had 307,000 last year, and they went out and said, hey, his core count, let's take him to the next level, and they got 456, so great. It went up 149,245 in NBC. And here's how you went from a loss to a big win, et cetera. So you're looking at the top of the report going, oh my gosh, look at all these guys who have net more volume. I mean, this is right here, this is more volume. Right here, this is more volume. Right here, this is more volume. But we didn't hire any more people. Ah, that's because if you go to the bottom of the report, you can see that, oh, we had a lot of business here and we lost a lot. And we had a lot, and we lost a lot, lost a lot, lost a lot. So as we lose business and activity, the phone's not ringing, the truck's not rolling, the paperwork's not flying and being matched and so forth. But the energy that went here flowed into here. So basically, if you sell the market, because everybody's a good customer, then basically the GDP goes up, 2% or something, and you went up 3%, you think, oh, we're great. But what you're not seeing is underneath those financial aggregated numbers is there's actually huge volatility at the top and the bottom of this report. Now, I could get into more lessons learned. In other words, why did these accounts go up so much, on the top 10? And down here, why? What are the root causes for why these fell out? And, what are we going to do next year so that we have fewer of these, losses, and we have more of these, so let's make some luck. Let's have, that really went up. Yeah, it's because we hyper-focused like crazy, a total team on it. And I talk about 5-5-5 inputs. In other words, all financial numbers are outputs. Your business is a black box. What are you doing as far as inputs? So if you focus on your 5 most profitable customers and say, let's take them to the next level, and if you as a whole team focus on your 5 most important target accounts, criteria to be determined or whatever, and the team focuses on them. And if you focus on your 5 biggest losers that have a lot of hidden lose-lose activity costs where you can consolidate picks, orders, whatever, and save both sides of the fence, activity costs and economic benefits, then you're going to have more surprises on the top and fewer surprises on the bottom. And as a sidebar, there's this topic of target gazelles. That's one of the 5 groups I just talked about. In other words, you take the 5 biggest profitable guys right here, and then your 5 target accounts. One way to look for gazelles would be to go over here and look, say, here, wait a minute. Here's a guy who did, $1,900 in operating profit. That's a decent account that'll support a sales rep calling on him. And boom, they exploded. Why? If this is one of the 3% of all companies out there that are perpetual innovators and they're growing because they're innovating, maybe we should forward invest in them and try to partner them because they will then grow us. So that's a concept. Next slide shows more examples of it, looking for new potential gazelles, perpetual innovators. So here I took a little subset out where you can see that 2 years ago, nothing, boom. Little bit, boom. These are little guys. Say, who are these guys that are growing so fast? And figure out if it would be worthwhile going after them. Now, another sort of analytical tool concept before we get into rethinking your counter model. This would be an electrical wholesaler. And what we did is we took counter business and we did a ranking within that category. And at the top, we have the best, most profitable guys. And at the bottom, we have the worst. So here's a counter guy who gave us, 12 grand, but the revenue per invoice was 543. The GP per invoice was 184. The expense was 65. So 184 less 65 times 22 invoices, ching, gave us a grand total of 22,619 in NBC. Oh, here it is, right here. This is the accumulating thing. And same thing. So basically, you realize that profit power comes from having customers that buy larger volumes from you in a steady stream of, on average, orders. You have small ones that lose money on, but on average, the margin dollar is substantially more than the cost to serve, and so that gives you a profit. So that's great. And you'll notice that the margin percent here is all pretty, looks like, book price counter-esque kind of margins. Now you go to the bottom of the report, and the margins are pretty much the same, even a little bit lower. Maybe some of these guys are cherry pickers where we gave them contract prices and they only come in and buy when they're in the neighborhood type of thing and cherry pick stuff. But you can dig into each one of these signs and find out specifically what's going on. But so here at the bottom, we have a guy that, let's go to the Biggest Loser here, where we lost $6,000. So they had 173 in sales per order, $51 per invoice. The expenses run at 67. So on average, we're losing what, 16 bucks an order. But over here, they gave us 397 invoices. So this is somebody with multiple vans, they're coming in there and really racking up the total. Remember earlier I talked about a guy that, did 20 invoices a day. So you can buy 250 business days and you're coming with, one and a half orders a day. So put faces on these people and dig a little deeper and say, what's going on? And what are we going to do about this? And, that's the beginning of innovation. So I talked at the bottom here about 5-why analysis. So that's where somebody says, here's the problem. Well, why does the problem exist? Oh, because of maybe 1, 2, 3 things. Well, why do those exist? And you sort of work backwards. So you have, it's called a fishbone diagram. At the head of the fish, you've got an initial, pain point. But as you work backwards, you find out there could be a lot of variables, all the root causes that create this. And then you want to look at the vital few, that create the most, turbulence as far as the rolled up, pain point or cost to you. And you want to push the wheel of learning. And I'll get into that real quickly here. If you on any of my terms, if you just go to Google and you type in Merrifield plus wheel of learning in quotes or something, these little video clips from YouTube will pop up. I'll have little articles, whatever. But basically, the whole wheel of learning thing, if you go to my YouTube, and you, search for Bruce Merrifield plus playlists, you'll find 9 playlists with like 430 plus, clips, all averaging about 4 minutes. So playlist number 5, Clips 41 to 53 dive big time into this. You know, let's observe, be curious, ask questions, come up with theories, go do some research, feel whatever, try some experiments. They never work out perfectly, but it raises new questions, and around we go. Sort of the scientific method, if you will, that you learned in seventh grade, but need to dust off your skill set for. So if I'm looking at a wholesale store, think Fastenal location, versus your warehouse counter, you know, where's the location? It's different than where your warehouse is. How have they racked it up to allow self-picking, more efficient trade credit, margins are higher, et cetera. I remember sitting in a meeting. We was a big electrical wholesale guy with a bunch of branch managers there. And, you know, we came this issue of the minnows came up. And, you know, one guy said, hey, you know, let be real. You know, I went to Home Depot. I parked in front. You know, I walked in. I needed two things from the electrical section. They got 3,000 SKUs in there, which is all of our cream items. I found the items quick enough. I walked over, I scanned them, zap, zap, swiped my credit card through for $8 or something, and I was back in my car in less than 5 minutes. That is not what we have going on in our 1910 grocery store model, where people come in, they line up, they wait for a human to go run and pick stuff for them, then we give them trade credit involving all the paperwork and so forth. So, you know, if you want to get in that small business, you have to have a model that allows you to make a profit. Okay. So now we're going to get into specific plays. When you go to the bottom of the losing minnow report, so you're looking at the worst case sort of, you know, kind of guys, you're going to find different stories. In subgroups earlier, I mentioned the contractor, the customer lives nearby, and they want to work off the distributor's inventory to avoid no shrinkage. And so that's a narrow one aspect of a multivariable story from a holistic, you know, procurement productivity point of view. And if you've got, it gets to the point where they've got 10 vans, they each are coming in there 1 to 3 times a day. But here's a fly in the ointment. Oh, but we have a rep assigned to that account. And because they actually, at the end of the year, they're cranking up a lot of sales and margin dollars. We got a rep who's making $1,500, $3,000 in margin. So obviously the rep doesn't want us messing with their income. However, what the customer is not looking, because they're just focused on one thing, is the opportunity cost. In other words, if they're all waiting in line, they're not up billing time. So their uptime ratio, which is total hours of labor bill divided by total payroll hours, might be at 50%. It could be at 70% if they would be able to say, tomorrow is going to come. And these are the jobs we have. So let's place our orders for these jobs tonight. And the next morning, somebody will stop by the distribution center and pick up, you know, different plastic boxes, if you want, bin boxes of kits of stuff needed for jobs. Then the laborers, the van jocks, come in first thing in the morning to say, I'm here, give me a cup of coffee, I'm ready to go. And you give them, you know, their instructions and their kits of stuff to go do. Then they get out and they start doing an extra hour of labor each day just because of that. And if one guy is very careful about what they order, you don't have, oh, I forgot to get this, I got to go back, whatever. That would be an approach to take. Or you could say, well, wait a minute. Let's statistically look at what you bought this past year. And statistically, what would somebody have in their bucket they take into the job to inspect something? Maybe they can take care of it right there and not go back to the van. So eliminate go back to van trips. Maybe on the van, and in spite of no shrinkage, we have a, you know, an uptime kit, an insurance policy of these are the most statistically common things you would need to sort of make a quick fix. And yes, there's a negative. We now have some inventory, but maybe to spend $10 of inventory carrying costs, shrinkage included, to get $500 worth of, you know, labor productivity, customer satisfaction onto the next job, that would be a good trade-off. So if you could do something like that, then basically what happens is you've got a three-way win. You've got the customers, the distributors winning because they've consolidated a lot costs, The customer's winning because they've got a positive trade-off here in this new, you know, fulfillment, you know, process. And then the customer's customer winning because people get to the job on time, they get the job done because they have what they need, and they can get onto the next job, you know, without having to run back to the counter to get something for which you cannot bill. And I basically got into this contractor uptime inventory system by sort of explaining what I just did. Sorry about that. So play sort of another nuanced aspect of small orders at the counter type of thing would be the big potential, but not really when you look at what's going on cherry picker. When I was doing a turnaround at a simple rank report, I went to the bottom of the rank report. I said, who's this? They said, oh my gosh, he's the king. I mean, he's huge. He buys zillions. He's got his own mini warehouse, et cetera, 4 locations, 35 vans. But when I looked at, well, they were just small little orders, and I looked at the stuff. They were all dust collectors. They weren't, you know, milk and eggs and potatoes, you know, the staples. So I stopped by unannounced, but I had a title on my card. The honcho himself came out, and we've chatted. And I said, look, here's my problem. You gave me 250 tiny little orders where there's enough margin to cover the cost of the stuff. I'm losing a lot of money. He said, well, that's your problem. I said, well, no, it's our problem because you're able to take that dust collecting item and bill labor with it and take care of a customer and give them good service. So don't you want to work with me? He says, no, I don't want to work with you. I said, all right, well, you leave. I know I had confirmed already that basically his father and their father were married, and he was married to the distributor, you know, principals at their generation. It's a multi-generational relationship with a big competitor of mine. I said, okay, fine. So here's the new deal. I'm going to put you on trade credit because why you go 60 days to take a discount on a $15 order is beyond me. But anyway, I'm going to put you on trade credit, strict minimum order, you know, and freight's unbundled and he in list price. And he said, if you do that, I'll never buy from you again. And so I said, well, that's great. You know, in 45 minutes, I've saved $15,000 in activity costs. I don't get a return on my investment that quickly. I'm being, you know, cheeky here. I didn't really, I was very, you know, patient and diplomatic about it. And he just said, well, you know, you don't know what you're doing in this company. You're going to run to the ground type of thing. So he went on strike for, I don't know, 3 weeks. But then they called up and they needed a goofball item and we had it. And they said, all right, here's the checks in the mail. Please give us open credit and we'll pay on time. And so they became about a $40,000 a year, 7% operating profit account because we still had the cherries. So, you know, that's, you know, you're going to find these people at the bottom. And you're going to, you know, you can approach them diplomatically to see if you can work something out. But that failing, you can dictate new terms and you will still keep the business because you still have the cherries. Third part of this play, creating a formal minnow division. So when you realize that the sea of minnows, most of them are self-employed, non-growing, non-innovating, non-changing, you know, creatures out there, and they're not going to be the next big oak tree. Then you say, all right, how do I hive off all of these minnows from some salespeople that may have their numbers assigned to them, create a new division? And it's not that hard to, you know, if you let this happen anyway, to, you know, go do a ranking report of the rep stuff and say, look, the bottom 50% of your customers are, you know, maybe 10% of your total income. You know, with a few exceptions, let's go through them, but, you know, let's find these 95%. We're going to assign them to the minnow division. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a check for the commissions you would have made on these guys for the next full year. So you got a full year of income protection to actually reinvest your time and energy, you know, on key accounts that matter. So let's whip out the 5-5-5 report, your 5 best accounts, your 5 target accounts, your 5 biggest losing accounts that we think we could turn into winners. And let's go to work on those so that you can, you know, make up 3-5 times the volume and income that you made in these little guys. But when you give it to a new division, you say, given my cost structure, what are going to be my pricing and my terms? We may, you know, obviously stick with list price or even raise them a bit. We may have strict minimum orders, unbundled freight. We may have a dynamic sort of schedule. The bigger your order, the more incentives you have to first, you know, get free freight. And then even beyond that, you may be able to, based on fatter line items or fatter orders, actually start to get an overall discount on the order size. You'll notice that Let me trouble my mouse here. There's a, you know, a term here, OptiQuote. If you Google OptiQuote, that's actually an MRO, industrial supply, Jansen kind of distributor, who has come up with a dynamic calculator. It's like a configurator. It's like build your own order. And even off of that, you can sort of build your own replenishment system over time. And it can be used by salespeople in the field. They've got different calculation cost assumptions built into their calculator. Be used by the purchasing people who might be doing quotes for house accounts or general bids, and they've got on their website for minnows to come in and sort of build larger average order sizes. And Jet.com sort of pioneered this model of, you know, hey, order size costs are reality for us, so we want to give you an incentive to, you know, get a big enough margin dollar content so we can cover our cost to serve and make some money. And then, you know, when you sort of say, all right, well, now we have to announce that we're going to change the rules of the game, these minnows. And sometimes people say, fine, just put your toe in the water. Don't jump in with both feet. And by the way, one case study, you know, management team sitting around the table and they're all got their arms crossed, little clouds over their head. And I said, by the way, is there any of these accounts, small accounts that you'd like to exempt? And the CEO said, well, yeah, I'd like to exempt my dentist because I tried to persuade him to buy these disposable plastic, you know, gloves from us. He'd been buying from the dental supply distributor. So fine, the dentist obliged his client. And he now has two vendors. He's got his dental supply distributor and he buys his gloves from, but that creates a small order. So we took that guy off the list. And then, you know, the CEO said, well, next time I go in there, I'm going to tell him, just, you know, go ahead and buy those things from the, you know, the dental supply distributor. So once, you know, one guy was on the board of the Girl Scouts and they were selling napkins at cost or something. So everybody had their little pet things. And once they were able to exempt their pets and be able to take care of them or not on their own terms, they were like, yes, send the letter out type of thing. And you can send it out in waves. You could send it out if you've got 50% that are minnows that are losers, you might send it out to the worst 10% and then the next 10%. But you'll find very quickly your courage comes up and you're going to, you know, get this thing done. And sometimes in a dramatic turnaround, you know, you acquire somebody and you're going to fold them into your business or something, and you realize they're nothing but minnows substantially anyway. They got one or two really good accounts and the rest are just, you know, little guys. You may basically say, all right, what we're going to do is send out the letter, track transactional activity drops so we know when we can lay off trucks, drivers, warehouse people, and inside salespeople. It's the first layer of fulfillment activity cost that exceeds the margin dollars you lose. So all these little minnows say, you know, forget you, I'm going to go somewhere else. So you know when you've got slack, and if you don't want to, if you can't dynamically redeploy that into 555 kind of opportunities, or you have a chance to say, you know, really, I got a one-time chance to sort of rank and yank, you know, the 10% least productive kinds of people. That might be something you would do in a more dramatic turnaround. You know, typically when you acquire somebody that's sick and not well, you're going to find out you've got these opportunities hiding within the numbers. So summary thoughts on small house accounts. Their high gross margin percent is only part of the story. You're not looking at the total profit equation where that it turns out that the size of the order and cost to serve does matter. You are a variable cost processing business. And so, you know, people can only do so many picks per day. They only stop the truck so many deliveries per truck per day, et cetera. And there's an activity cost that goes with that. So, you know, to look at the margin dollars per line, and those add up to margin dollars per invoice, and the cost to serve dollars per line, and I add it up to cost to serve per invoice, adds up to a profit dollars. It's dollars of pro or con, you know, of a true profit or loss. Now, in theory, the margin percent is incorporated in the margin dollars. But, you know, when you're thinking of a world of 20 to 35% margin, but orders go from $2 to $5,000 out of the warehouse, or an $8,000 in one case, I saw. you know, the margin, you know, if you cut the price, so you only have 20% margin, but the order goes from $100 to $1,000, you're still going to have a winning profit equation. So you've got to look at the total holistic math here to see what's really going on. So don't be simplistic and just look at gross margin percent. And also remember, you don't have Amazon economics. And even if you try to do a pure wholesale model, you're hobbled by your location. You know, most distributors have big warehouses in, you know, far out funky parts of town near major highways, which makes sense for, you know, trucks coming in and out type of thing. Whereas wholesale stores tend to be on four-lane commercial highways. You can see their sign, you pull in, some parking spaces, you run into a, you know, well-lit kind of place, and you know, there are all these little goofy items. So, you know, you don't, I mean, it's all right to have a will call. In other words, in an emergency, somebody comes in to get something, but don't try to turn that into a store thinking people are going to schlep all the way out to wherever you are, and then you're getting them wholesale services, wholesale prices, even with discounts. You're going to wind up having 1,000 little cuts, and you're going to find that the busyness of all this stuff prevents your focus on smart innovations for the 555 kind of customers. And then, you know, when it comes to house accounts, don't see it monolithically. You can actually take, you know, little slices and you know, get sort of experimentally smart, you know, as you evolve a full-blown, you know, successful Minnow division. So looking ahead, this is to future webinars. These I've been so far, these have been sort of the easier plays. The tougher plays are coming along. And those include actually working with the reps, you know, on big losing accounts and turning big losers into winners. It's a little bit like alchemy, you know, bad stuff into gold. And you can understand, I mean, you know, a lot of reps say, well, wait a minute, if we go out and suggest to a customer that we have, there's activity going on that we're not aware of that actually is unnecessary, it's been hidden, you know, in the general financial numbers, we don't see these things, and we suggest that there's a new way to buy, aren't we saying to the buyer, you're stupid, you don't know how to buy? I just don't even want to rock the boat because, you know, I make commissions on this and I don't want to have any downside risk at all. So the question is, how do we take away that risk completely? And how do we frame it in a way that the customer's like, hey, thanks a lot. This really helps. And by the way, can I give you more business? Or we would ask for more business. And other issues, I mean, there's going to be defensive sort of ego issues. You know, who wants to say, I've been running this place, allowing, you know, all these sort of losing activities to go on, you know, and I've had a received wisdom, you know, data-free belief system that, you know, made me pursue these things, as opposed to saying, hey, everybody is forgiven. You know, we were doing the best job we had with the financial numbers we had. Now we've got new data, we have new insights, we have new opportunities. Hey, you know, let's not, you know, worry about the past. Let's go get the upside possibilities. And then the third thing is, as we work with the reps and accounts, we have to be bifocal. Through the short-sighted lens, we want to do a core customer renewal and optimizing and creating, turning lose-lose activity costs into win-win savings for both big customers and ourselves. But at the same time, what are going to be our cloud e-commerce business and e-selling model innovations? You know, the sales force you're going to have 3 years from now is not at all like the sales force you've had for the last 100 years. Millennials are coming in to do all the buying. They want to do their own education 24/7, 365. They only want to see, you know, only want to talk to somebody, not see them when they want to talk to them. So how do you provide 24/7, 365 e-selling support? And this idea of time and territory where you're going to make a lot of calls on a regular basis and bring in donuts and be a nice guy and so forth, you know, we have to understand why that paradigm is collapsing and what's the new paradigm going to look like so we can get, you know, be the first ones to get there. And you don't have to be perfect. You just have to get there sort of before the other guys who just don't see it and don't change. So that's the end of my slideshow. And I will look forward to seeing you in the next webinar. Thank you very much.